Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Or your grandma here with us, making carne asada.
She does love a cold Corona.
Throw in some dancing.
Oh, we can watch the game.
I'll drink to that.
So a backyard concert with football, food, dancing, and Corona?
And your grandma.
Or we could keep it simple.
Simple is good. Want a Corona?
Thanks. Salud to the perfect day.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From the corner, Berry. Rick Berry has not missed a free throw against Washington. Now it is Berry. Back to Clifford Ray. Goes to Rick Berry.
Golden State getting that ball moving. Intended for Berry. Berry, look at that pass. Rick Berry, look at that shot, would you?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Berry wants to make a move. There's a Berry. He's got his shot.
Right, it's the Surf Man over here and myself coming back once again after a little hiatus. I've been busy getting back to Colorado after the heat and humidity of Florida, doing some coaching with the, congratulations getting out of the humidity.
Yeah.
With the big three, I was very excited after our first victory and the first weekend, and then we laid an egg last weekend, unfortunately. Cyrus, I think you might have shot better than my guys. We were one for three. We were one for 13 from 3-point range, and in today's basketball world, you're not winning basketball games if you're shooting one for 13 from 3-point range. It's not gonna happen. But my guys played hard, and we got great looks and did some good stuff. But the other team shot 60%. So when you go one for 13 and they go 60%, your chances of winning are there's two chances, slim and none.
Is that one of those things where there's just nothing you could do about that?
You can't. What are you gonna do? You can't catch up making twos.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And we did get some twos, and we even had that. We had three layups roll off the rim. We didn't get those as well. It was just one of those things. The other team was on it. If there was anything we didn't do well, I don't think we played as tough a defense, and we gave them a lot of good open looks of threes, and as the way they were shooting, they capitalized on that. So congratulations to them, Rick Mahorn's team, the Aliens. They knocked us off. So we're in the pack now at 1-1, and we're playing the Iceman, George Gervin's team, the Ghostbusters this weekend in Baltimore coming up on Saturday, and hopefully.
But Rick, let's take a step back here, because the last time we did a show, it was right before your first game.
Right.
And that first game was awesome. Can you recap how your season?
Oh, yeah, no, we played really well. I mean, Leandro's countryman, Lucas Mariano, a 6'10", 260-pounder. I mean, he can shoot the three. He can get inside. Really nice player, and he played well. We did a good job. Larry Saunders is a heck of a defensive player. He was defensive player of the year in one of the for a few years when he was a young player in his early 20s, but he's still a factor. And then I've got Leandro, of course, our Golden State Warrior, Leandro Barbosa, who's still, I don't know necessarily the blur, but he's not slow. He's still pretty quick. I don't know. He told him, I said, I don't know if we could still call you the blur. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what it would be. And then Jody Meeks, who's a hell of a shooter and doing stuff. And Jody just had a tough time shooting the ball, as did Leandro. So, I mean, come on, 1 for 13. That's pretty tough. And everybody struggled. It's just one of those crazy games that happens, and you just make the most of it and move on. And now we've got to find a way to win some games so that we don't get eliminated after the first six games, because they'll eliminate the two teams with the worst record, and hopefully that's not going to be one of us. So we'll see how it plays out, and got a tough matchup. See, here's the interesting thing. My matchup coming up this Saturday, They have two big guys, 6'9", 6'11", that they start with. And I like to start with my 6'11", Larry Sanders, but then I've got 6'4", Jody Meeks, and Leandro. So I'm a big believer. I don't like to necessarily try to match up my opponent. I kind of like sometimes, you know, let them worry about matching up with us. Okay, sure. Okay, the one big guy, Jackson, he's going to take whoever is guarding, whether it's Leandro or Jody, and maybe try to post up and do stuff. But if you play good body position and he can shoot and score over you, all right, it's 2 points. We can live with that. But how the hell is he going to guard either Leandro or Jody out in the perimeter? That's not happening, you know? So I always kind of like that. Let's make the other guys worry about you, and we'll see how it happens. If they're beating us badly, well, then I'll bring, you know, Lucas and Mariano and to match up with the big guy and see how that plays out. But it's like it's a chess game, you know, attack, counterattack. I mean, it's like having a playoff game in one game where you got to make adjustments. And in this case, you got to make the adjustments early, and nothing's set in stone. One thing about basketball, people, you have to understand, plays are set just so everybody knows where you're supposed to be. And then you have all this wonderful stuff designed to get you a basket. Do you know how often it ever works out that you actually get that play to go to its fruition the way it's designed? And, you know, because you play the game with this premise, take what the defense gives you. And I tell my guys, look, if you see that you can back cut a guy, back cut him. Do whatever is there that they give you to do, and hopefully your teammates will react to it and be able to take advantage of that. Don't be robotic. Don't be like you're programmed to run this play. That's the way foreigners used to play all the time. They were very robotic. They played the game. They tried to run the plays exactly the way they're lined up. They didn't do a lot of innovation and things of that nature. But that's changed. I mean, just, you know, look at how many foreign players are playing in the NBA these days. So that's what you have to really do. But you have to be smart about doing it. You can't back cut if it's not there. If it's not there, then run the play the way the play is designed to see what develops off of that. And then you have to learn to set your man up properly. And that's what I think the thing I've watched in games now. Boy, so many players just don't know how to set their men up properly. And that's the whole thing about the two-man game. That's such a travesty. You don't set screens in basketball, you know, and you hear the term all the time. As I mentioned, Jeff Van Gundy probably hates me because I use his name all the time. Jeff Van Gundy on TV, you know, one of the top coaches. Well, he didn't set a very good screen. Well, you don't set anything in basketball. You put yourself in the most advantageous position, and then I'm supposed to set my guy up, run him into you. Now I make you a screener. Okay. But you're not. But then what happens? You do a lousy job, and the guy says, "Well, I have to set a screen." So now he moves a little bit, and they're just lucky that the officials don't call it unless you take a guy's head off. And so that's a part of the game that is just horrendous, you know. And you know,
Jeff Van Gundy, by the way, I don't know if you saw this. He's now the number one assistant to Tyronn Lue, Ty Lue at the LA Clippers.
Well, yeah, good for him. He just keeps collecting all that money. It's. Maybe he'll get them to set some screens down there.
Would you agree, Rick, that the best job in the world right now is an NBA head coach or at least a lead assistant that makes a ton of money? Because chances are you're going to get fired after 1 year, and you get to sit around and do absolutely nothing for the next 4 to 5 years and collect.
Well, the head coach, that's what happens. There you get three-year, four-year, five-year contract. They give you chicken crap, and they tell you to make chicken salad out of it, and you're not very good at doing that. And you get fired and you wind up getting paid off. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy what they do. I don't
so much don't money. It's so much money. And it's guaranteed.
Just the players. Come on. We've talked about it. The lowest paid player in the NBA this season made twice as much money as I made in my best full season. And he hardly ever plays. And, you know, the Brown and Steph and those guys with the huge contracts. They make as much money as I made in the best full season I ever had in the first game of the season. One game, Cyrus. One. So when I hear these guys complaining about how tough they have it, it's very difficult for me to go ahead and to sympathize with them. Okay. I mean, seriously. I mean, oh my gosh. But God bless them. You know, it'd be stupid not to take it.
So, Rick, how did you feel when Klay Thompson last year turned down 2 years, $48 million, thinking he deserved more?
I was disappointed. I mean, because I would like to see him be one of the rare players who plays his entire career, a high-level career, a Hall of Fame career, and to be able to do it in the same, you know, at the same team. And He's got everything in place, why he wants to leave. We may as well get into that now. I'm sure we'll get some questions about that from some of our listeners. But, why would you want at this stage of your career to pick up and have to leave and go someplace else? You know, the old cliche that they say, the grass looks greener sometimes on the other side, but when you get over there, it maybe isn't. It might have a lot of holes in it or something like that. I mean, there could be other things. You've got two guys that you basically are like brothers. You've played together for all these years. You guys have had incredible success. You have your house, you have your friends, you have everything the way it's been forever. Why would you want to leave? I mean, and if they didn't offer you what you think you were worth, you know what you say, hey, you know what? I'm going to take it, but you guys need to go out and use that money that I think, you know, I would, even if you say, I think I was deserving of, use it to go get us another really good player to give us a chance to win another title. Let's bring somebody in here to help us win and try to do that. But I don't know. But then again, I mean, teams do crazy stuff. I know they got a big salary cap down in LA, but if you were to think if there was one team, if Clay becomes a free agent, that he could really help if he plays at any kind of a level close to what he could do, which is basically there, shoot the ball. Okay. 3-point shooting is one of the big, you know, one of the big negatives for the Lakers. Everybody talks about it. They can't make threes. Well, you bring in one of the greatest 3-point shooters in the history of the game, you know, as a new player on your team, you know, so maybe they come up with more money to make him happy to do that. And obviously if he went there, that certainly gives a new element to the Lakers. If LeBron can play anywhere near the way he played last year, which is remarkable at his age. And then Davis raised his game. And if he could stay healthy. So, I mean, they could have a really good team with somebody like Klay Thompson. I would think of all the teams I was thinking about that to go someplace where I would think he would only go somewhere where you have a chance to win, right? Why would you go for money? You go someplace and suffer through a terrible team and not win games. So the Lakers would be the team that I would think would be high on the priority list if they're willing to pay him the kind of money he thinks he would like to have. But again, it's Clay's life. I'm not, you know, bashing Clay. I mean, he could do whatever he wants to do. He's been great for the team. I'm grateful for what he did for the Warriors and the organization. It's just hard for me to understand why he would want to leave under the circumstances that exist, because I've had to do that and pick up. It sucks. You're moving, trying to go to a new team, trying to fit in. I mean, I don't know. God bless him, whatever he decides to do. But it's not an easy thing to do. I hope he decides to stay. But anyway, I don't know. Is there another team that you could think of where he could go and help them maybe be a championship caliber team? I don't know. I really don't.
Well, there's only a few teams that even have a realistic possibility of getting him, at least in terms of a free agency, and that's Orlando and Philly. Would he make a difference? I mean, yes. I don't know if a championship is the difference, but I don't know.
Philly could be interesting because of Embiid, you know? I mean,
And Maxey, right?
I mean, yeah. So that might not be a bad situation. And you don't have as many good teams in the East as you do in the West.
Correct.
So, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. I hope somehow, some way they figure a way to work it out. And Clay just decides that, you know what, maybe it's better. I'll stay here. But it's not like they're offering chum change. I mean, come on. It's not like they're trying to lowball them.
Correct.
Jeez. Anyway,
correct.
As they say, the other one is, you know, so that's happened twice now. Same thing with with KD. It hasn't worked out too well for him. And if he had stayed here, they'd liable to have won championship every year.
What are your thoughts about and who knows if this happens, but the rumor mill right now is talking about Kevin Durant going to the Rockets. Your former team. Yeah, your thoughts.
Well, I went there. It didn't work out. I mean, who knows? I mean, the coach, I mean, how are you going to get along with them? You know, how do you get along with your teammates? I don't know. I just really don't know. But that's a young team. It's certainly not a team that you would think is going to, but he goes there and they become a championship contender. I mean, if you're going to leave, that's the only reason I was willing to go with the Warriors. What I left is I was going with where? I was going with two future Hall of Famers. I was going with a really good team, Moses Malone and Calvin Murphy and Rudy Tomjanovich and Mike Newland. And, I mean, that was a really good team that really had a shot at being a championship team. And so that's one thing. But to leave a team with the history that you have and the teammates that you have and still with the potential of being a championship contender, you know, certainly not a favorite, but you could be a contender depending upon who they bring in. It just doesn't make, to me, logical sense to move.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but he's the only one's going to answer that. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. So let's get some of the questions that we have here before we talk about stuff and answer all the questions before we ask them.
Yeah, because I'm sure a lot of people in the chat are going to bring up because there's a lot of talk right now. Brian Windhorst of ESPN reporting today that the Warriors are indeed pursuing a trade for Paul George. I'm guessing that's going to be brought up in the chat. Before we go to the chat real fast, I have one question for you, sir, if you don't mind. Right. Just because I saw this the other day, and it fascinates me. I don't know how many other people it fascinates, but I had completely forgotten about this until I saw this post on social media that in, I believe, 2000 or 2001, the LA Lakers took away Jerry West's season tickets. And again, this is someone who was revered by that organization and who won titles with that organization. And I guess the rudimentary foundation of this stems from Jerry West and Phil Jackson having some sort of feud. They didn't like each other. I have no idea. This is where I come to you because I'd love to get your insights or your opinion at a bare minimum on that relationship. Jerry West and Phil Jackson, do they hate each other? Like what went on there?
I don't know, to be honest with you. When I get together, Jerry and I were friends, and so, you know, sad that he's no longer with us. I just had no idea. I knew he had some health issues. I had no idea they were obviously this serious, but I don't discuss stuff like that with them. Gotcha. We talk about more fun things, talk about what's going on with his family, you know, talk about fly fishing, talk about golf, whatever, you know, talk about some of the crazy stuff that's going on in the NBA, but specifically for him and his relationship, that's not my business. And I don't do that. I mean,
well, supposedly the relationship between those two frayed like in the 70s or 60s. And that's why I was wondering, that's why I wanted to pick your brain, because supposedly this goes back decades. And I have no idea what happened though. But clearly there was acrimony there. I don't know.
I don't know. All I know, the only thing I knew that got into, because Jerry had brought it up, was the fact of what he went through to try to get Shaq to the Lakers. He said it just was so crazy, you know, and he did it, you know, he made it happen. So,
yeah,
but he really disliked that part of it. And what's happening in coaching now, you see how many college coaches are stepping down because they don't want to deal with this NIL crap. I mean, yeah, they say, I don't want to deal with that. So it's not anything now. Recruiting is, you got to walk in. How much money can you offer the player?
Yeah. Well, Nick Saban's the biggest name, I feel like, who was like, I don't want to deal with this. I'm the greatest college coach maybe ever, but I want nothing to do with this NIL thing. It is crazy. You're right.
Yeah,
you're
well, that's football. Same thing happened in basketball. What's his face from Villanova? I mean,
Jay Wright. Correct. Yeah.
Right. You know, Jay Wright. I mean, he used to see, I don't want to deal with this crap. I mean, and a lot of guys feel that way. I mean, it really is true. I mean, so it's the teams that have the big budgets, have the big boosters who want to put up the money. And, you know, what kind of NIL money? I mean, it's crazy. I mean, as a kid played at my old alma mater and everything, he's made more money in one season playing for the U than I made in my first three full seasons in the NBA.
I'm sorry.
I mean,
that's rough.
It's crazy. It's just crazy. I mean, hey,
it is crazy.
You know, I don't begrudge them. God bless them. I mean, they're very lucky in order to be able to have that situation. But my God, I mean, I can understand, you know, helping the guy maybe have a few bucks so he can go out and go to dinner or something with some friends or whatever. But to pay that kind of money, it's basically becoming like minor league basketball, and you got to pay them. And hell, I don't even think the minor league baseball players make the kind of money these college guys are making. A lot of these guys are going to make more money there in college because they're not even good enough to play in the NBA.
Yeah, you are correct.
Yeah,
it is nuts. Crazy. It is nuts. You're absolutely, this whole world is nuts. Okay, are you ready to go to the questions, sir?
Let's go.
Let's start with Jim Cleveland. And real fast, even before we get to that, wanted to remind people, if you're watching this on the live feed with Mic'd Up, double tap the middle of your screen, and if you get that blue heart, you'll be notified every time Rick and I schedule a new show. So I just wanted to let folks know about that. And now here is...
Oh, hey, yes. I want you to know, maybe you are because you do more. I guess I can't be considering myself a real true broadcaster to do anything, because I happen to turn on, and I don't know why I even do it, to listen to Stephen A. Smith and those guys on First Take and ESPN, just even talking about it, giving them publicity. But and then Chris, I mean, Mad Dog, I mean, I've had some incidents.
He drives you crazy?
Well, first of all, I just wonder if they could ever do a show without yelling. I mean, why do people have to yell and scream? Can't you have an intelligent conversation without having to do that? And he's brutal.
So wait, Rick, are you saying you don't want to do this show? You don't want to yell at each other? We're not going to talk Warriors all day? What is going on, Rick? How can you not love this?
I mean, it's very difficult for me to have to listen to it. But then I had to listen to it because they got on Paul George, maybe the guy who was doing the podcast. Well, yeah, if you're not, and he's yelling all the time, doing the yelling. I mean, come on, give me a break. I mean, it's bleh. But I wanted to hear what he had to say because what is this about? Well, what did you do? You do a podcast, you know, like two times a week or something like that. What do you know? You're not doing that. You're not a broadcaster. You got to do it. What the hell? Okay, you know what? Just because you do it five times a week and you suck at it doesn't mean you're good. I mean, you're a professional. I mean, you know, just because the number of times you do it, are you any good at it? That's the thing. You know, if you did it once, you go and like me, I have a guy on. I don't go ahead and get a guest and then I record it and play it one time and do it and say, hey, yeah, I'm really a broadcaster. Oh, my God. It was pathetic. I mean, wasting people's time to talk about that and be blowing himself up and patting himself on the back and bragging about that he's a really good broadcaster and I did all this and I did all that. Well, if I was there, I would have said, would you like me to pat you on the back so you feel better?
Stephen Smith is saying Paul George is not a legitimate broadcaster because he only goes on 2 days a week. Is that the...
Something like that, whatever the hell it is. I mean, and bottom line is that... it's not a matter. If you have a show and you're doing something, you are a professional broadcaster if you're getting paid for it. Okay. That's the bottom line. That's the end of the story. The thing about it is, do you have as much experience? Stephen A. Smith. Well, I was a writer and I was a beat guy and I did this, blah, 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 blah. Well, great. Good for you. And you're getting paid and you're a millionaire now for having done that. Okay. So God bless you. Feel happy about it, but don't start knocking other people and saying they're not a broadcast. You know, you only do it two times a week. I mean, come on, all of a sudden, don't put yourself on some freaking pedestal like you're something special. I mean, a lot of people have gone through doing this forever. I mean, and for a long time, and you happen to be in the right place, the right time. You should be going to church or wherever you do believe in and, you know, donating and stuff and thanking God for you're in the position that you're in. And you got this opportunity. Because as much as these people are willing to pay you, it's because people are listening. But a lot of people are listening so they can get pissed off at you because they really don't like you. But they want to get more stuff and ammunition to tell everybody about the dumb things you might have said. Okay, so it's not like everything you say people believe in. Okay, I mean, yeah, and he does a nice job. I agree with a lot of stuff he says. I disagree with a whole bunch of stuff that he says. Okay, so, but that's the beauty of it. He's getting paid to express his opinion and he's very fortunate to do it. I mean,
a lot of money at that. Yeah. A lot of money.
Unbelievable. So,
yeah, it is. It is. Here's Jim. Let's hear what Jim has to say. Hold on.
Do you think picking up Paul George in a trade would be a good move for the Warriors? And then also, how aggressive do you think the Warriors should go after Klay Thompson? Thank you.
Yeah, well, I knew we'd get the Klay Thompson stuff. Well, I think they made a pretty good offer to him previously when he turned down the two years for $40-something million. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the last thing was. I thought that they were offering him another 2 years for like $20-something million a year or something, whatever. If that's the case, at this stage of your career, you know, he's not the player that he was 5 years ago, obviously. It's miraculous that he played at the level he played at with two what could have been career-ending injuries to come back from not one, but two. It's an incredible story. God bless him. I love what he's done for the Warriors, and I just wish he would stay. And why would it be a factor of thinking that you're not being paid what you deserve? I mean, you're at the end of your career. I mean, you're on the back end of your career. I mean, there's no way that you should expect to get paid as much money for what you did previously. They're paying you for hopefully what you're going to do for them now. And it's still not like they're embarrassing you or something or demeaning you by what they're offering. So I hope he does because, I mean, I love watching him play. It's, you know, one of my favorite players to watch. I just love the way that he does what he does so efficiently. I mean, come on, what he did in that one quarter with, what, 12 dribbles or 9 dribbles, that stuff is ridiculous. I mean, nobody's going to ever do that again in the history of the game. But, you know, stay. You know, come on, Klay, stay. Give us another shot. You know, Paul George, I don't know. I mean, who are they going to get rid of? Are they going to get rid of Wiggins? Who are they going to get rid of? Kuminga?
Well, here's the thing. I just want to add that if the Warriors trade Kuminga for Paul George, I think that's a disaster. I do not endorse that or support that. You're mortgaging the future for a 35-year-old who has proven time and time again.
I would agree with you.
But what some of the speculation I've seen, and again, this is largely based off two media members, Brian Windhorst and Mark Stein, is names like Wiggins, Chris Paul. I've seen Moses Moody's name. I've seen future draft picks. If it's not Kuminga and you're not giving up the house, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. But those are some of the names I've heard associated with this trade.
Yeah, well, that's just, I would agree with you. I don't think you can give up Kuminga. Kuminga has potential to be a really outstanding player. How good remains to be seen. He's got to keep improving his game and doing stuff, and he's done that to a degree. Hopefully he can continue to do it. He's still very young. And to give up a player with his potential for a 35-year-old, as you accurately made the statement that he has proven to be injury prone. You don't know how many games you're going to get out of him, but certainly he's a quality, super quality player, and it gives you another great offensive weapon to move forward. And so if that were the case, but then again, what happens, without Clay? I don't know. Who else do you bring in? If the money you're not going to pay him, you got to pay George a lot of money. I don't know. See, the thing, it gets so convoluted now because of the salary cap issues, and you have to have a master's degree, I think, in all of that stuff to follow out, what the exemptions are, how much he's paying, who's paying, how much you are paying in luxury taxes. I don't want to be bothered with that stuff. I just talk about whether the player would be a good player for him. Certainly, Paul George, a healthy Paul George playing for the Warriors, I think would make them a better basketball team the way they're constructed now. Now, if Clay leaves, I don't know. Who else do you get? Find someone else to bring in. It's very interesting to see what's going on. But I'll tell you one thing. There are a lot of players out there who really get passed over and you don't see. I got a kid playing for me that Leandro brought over from Brazil. He's 31 years old. And Lucas Mariano, he's 6'10", 260. He can shoot the three. He can put it on the floor. He can go inside. He's a nice player. He got some nice size. I don't know why you wouldn't bring guys like this in and bring them to camp and just watch them and see how they work and do. 6'10", 260, who's pretty nice and a nice player. I mean, got good shooting for him for 6'11". And yeah, I mean, why would you not want to bring a guy like that in and just experiment with him and see how he looks when you bring him in? Here's the one problem. The training camps are not really training camps. It's a joke. I mean, you're supposed to be in shape, ready to go. I mean, 3 days into camp, they're already playing exhibition games. And they don't play many of those. So we would come in. I mean, we knew we had a whole month at least. A month of training camp and exhibition games. And it was a while before we played an exhibition game. And you really had an opportunity, I think, for the team to really see what you could or couldn't do. It's very interesting. But I hope the Warriors come up with something, that Mike Jr.'s got something up his sleeve that he's going to pull off and do. Because I would hate to see this great era that's taken place for the Warriors come to a crashing halt. It was disappointing. But the year before was unbelievable. And the other championship they won was, I think, their finest accomplishment, I think, when they won the last championship. That was so unexpected. And that made it even that much more gratifying, I think. But it would be nice to see them have at least another, one. They could have one or two more shots if they got the right people and brought them in, realistically.
I think so too. Yeah. I think so too. But I'm an advocate for Stephen Curry getting five. That would make me immensely happy, like everyone else, I think.
I think he could have easily had five if KD hadn't left.
Easily.
What's KD? What is KD? He hasn't even come close to getting another one.
Nope. Yeah. Nope, not even close.
That's the same thing I was saying with Clay. What do you want to leave for? I mean, depending where you go, I mean, what kind of a chance is a team, if you decide to go, is they're going to have to maybe win? Why would you leave to not go to a team, unless it was a team that really had a legitimate shot at winning a championship? I just don't understand why you would do that.
Pride.
I really don't.
Pride is a bitch.
Well, but pride for what? For what? For what? Money? I mean, you're on a team.
I think the commitment. I'm hearing a lot that he wants at least a third year in any contract offer because I guess because of Draymond, Steph, and And he values himself, you know, and I don't know if it's a lack of self-awareness, but he values himself higher than I think most people who are watching this with a slightly more objective lens are seeing. And he that's who he thinks he is. And it's just sometimes, I mean, Rick, I don't, it sounds like you never went through this, but there are.
Well, hey, wait a second. I'm going to interrupt you. I went through it. You know what mine was? You know why I left the Warriors?
I don't know.
$10,000.
So you do understand Clay then?
No, because that was a whole different situation. I mean, I would they were.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Scotty Sterling, Scotty Sterling was a GM at the time, said, Rick, I can't believe you're going to blow this deal over $10,000. And I said, Scotty, I think you got it freaking backwards.
Exactly.
I can't believe you're willing to let me go over $10,000.
Thank you. I'm glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that, because that's the other side of that equation is why are you the one who should be losing money in this process when they could easily offer that same amount?
And it's not like they're offering Clay chicken crap. I mean, we're talking about multi-millions of dollars. I mean, he's got enough money to live 50 lifetimes.
You're right. And so it sounds like in your case, and correct me if I'm wrong, your issue was it was a matter of principle.
Yes.
And in Clay's case, I feel like there's a lot more pride and ego being involved here, but it's unfortunate.
Well, obviously, I was worth a lot more than $10,000. I only went 13 years without making the playoffs after I left. I think maybe I could have helped them a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I think so, too. I love it. Do you want to hear from Taylor?
Let's go.
Hey, Rick. I was curious to hear your thoughts on the difference in rules from the NBA and what the guys will see overseas at the Olympics. How does that kind of change the game there?
Great question.
Yeah, because the officiating overseas is a bit different. You got to get used to it. But here's the thing. As a player, you adjust to the officials. You go out, you play your style to start with. You play aggressive and do stuff. If they're calling it closely, you back off. If they're letting you get away with it, you keep doing it. I mean, that's what it is. And you don't let the officials dictate how you approach the game other than adjusting to the way they're calling the fouls, whether more contact or less contact being allowed, and play your game and use your talent and use your skills. I can tell you where the difference is enormous and just insane, insane. My son Canyon playing on the 3x3 team, FIBA 3x3 basketball it's probably worse than pick up 3-on-3 in a playground when it comes to physicality. Oh my God. It is so overly physical. In fact, I remember when Canyon first got started doing this like 4 or 5 years ago, he said, Dad, I'm going in the weight room. I said, I have to get stronger. I got to get bigger and stronger. He said, because it's so physical. And it's a shame because I don't know why any league, and the NBA included on this with the playoff basketball bullshit that I have to hear every year, allow the game to become more physical because, and I've said it, I'm like a broken record and I'll say it to the day I die. It doesn't take talent. It doesn't take skill. It doesn't take ability to hold and grab and shove and push. And you're giving an advantage to the less skilled player by doing that. Why would you want to do that? To take away and diminish the opportunity for the people who really know how to play to utilize their skills to their fullest, but you let it get negated somewhat by the over physical play that is being allowed come playoff time in the NBA. It's one of the biggest pet peeves I have about the game. It's been that way since I came in. The regular season was crazy. And now it's not that way in the regular season, but they still let it happen come playoff time. The game becomes so much, even now it's even more dramatic. I mean, back when I played, it was crazy during the regular season. It got insane during the playoffs. This way, it's like hardly anything during the regular season, and it gets very physical during playoff time. And I just don't think it allows for the best basketball to be played. And it's also, when you check and see, one of the reasons why a lot of players, if you would do, somebody did research, to take a look at some of the top players in their careers and see how many players, what did they, just talk about the offensive players, what did they average in the regular season and what they average in playoffs? And I would say a great many of them probably were not as good in the playoffs as they were in the regular season.
That's fair. And just to, and as an example, just to provide more context in case people aren't following, like, you weren't a fan of the Bad Boy Detroit Pistons, correct? Like, that
no.
to you? Yeah.
No, but no, I'm not. I wasn't a fan of it, but the officials need to be calling it. Because the players again will adjust, but if it's up to the officials. The worst thing about officiating, I think, is the inconsistency of during the course of the game itself. So in baseball, they have it. Every umpire almost has his own strike zone. I mean, there's a strike zone that's supposed to be for everybody, right? But it's not. Each umpire kind of has his own strike zone. Well, in basketball, it's the same situation. Is that they come out and they interpret the rules differently. But the thing is, it's fine if you're going to interpret it that way. And you call it that way from the tip-off to the horn at the end of the game, I can live with that. But what I can't live with is that you're calling it close early and you let stuff go late or vice versa. Because you can't adjust to that. What are you supposed to do? You don't know what to do because you don't know what the hell the official is going to do. You know, if you get real physical, it's going to be a foul probably. Whereas, you know, early in the game, it would be a foul. Late in the game, it's not. What the hell?
If I'm hearing correctly, you want consistency, which we never get enough of.
Consistency in life is so important. I mean, consistency, that's why as a player, as a coach, you want a player who's a consistent player. Mm-hmm. I want, you know, here's the deal. In an 81-game schedule, I was told this by my ex-father-in-law and coach in college, Bruce Hale, was a great pro player. He said, Rick, during the course of that season, you're going to have maybe, you know, 6, 7, 8 games or so where things are just not going for you offensively, whatever. You got to find something else to do. Fine. Okay. So that's the case. So I know that's going to be the case. So I try to adjust to it. But if I'm going to go out and play the game the way I know how to play it, and every game I have to make adjustments within the course of the game as to how I have to play based upon what the officials are doing, that's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And as a coach, I would want to have a player who plays and goes out and can get me 15 to 20 points on a consistent basis and maybe, you know, 6 to 10 rebounds a game consistently, as opposed to a guy who'll go out and get me 30 and get 6 the next night, you know, and then he'll get 22 and he'll get 8, you know, you want somebody you can rely on pretty much what's going to happen. And I think that made me really proud. Jeff Mullen said this about me, when my great, great player, teammate, you know, great college player and
all-star player. As well.
Jeff said something that I read it, that he had said to somebody. He said, the one thing about Rick is that if Rick had a bad game offensively, you can pretty much bank on the fact that he wasn't going to have one the next game.
You could say that about every truly great player, I believe.
Anyway, and that's why. That's getting to be consistent. So you have one of those games, okay, you write it off, but you don't have a whole bunch of them, you know, for an extended period of time, and you're not like a roller coaster ride.
So these refs.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the toughest jobs there. And I sympathize with them. I mean, it's got to be tough. You know, every time you blow your whistle, somebody's mad at you. But the whole thing about it is that you really can't let this stuff bother you. You got to be like an armadillo. You know, you got to just let it roll off your back, or a duck, let the water roll off your back. Not let it impact you. A lot of officials did let it impact them, and they changed, and they were really bad, actually. And so just be consistent. Just call it the same way every single time. And then that's the kind of guy that you respect, because you know what you're going to get every single time you walk out there on the floor. You know the way he calls the game, and you adjust your game accordingly.
Yes, sir. Here's Webby. You got the name correct.
Hi, Rick and Cyrus. I just watched my first Big Three basketball game this past week. Very interesting. Hey, I wanted to get your thoughts about Ice Cube's offer to Caitlin Clark of a $5 million private contract to play in the Big Three. I guess that happened in March. What do you think of that and how that might affect her play in the WNBA?
Well, obviously, that's in the past that she didn't accept it, and I can understand probably why, except for if she hadn't had the popularity she had and had the deals that she got from some of the sponsors and other people where she's going to make millions of dollars, for 8 or 9 weekends for 2 days, that's for 18 or 20 days to get $5 million. And nobody expected that she could do anything. I tell you, she'd have very difficult time with the physicality of it. Very difficult. But I tell you what, she would score. She's such a great shooter, and she would score. And I know if I was coaching her doing stuff, I'd run some stuff and make damn sure I got her some shots. But physically, she would have a very difficult time doing it. But why would she do that when she has an opportunity to – she's going to make millions of dollars because of the endorsement deals that she has, and she doesn't make anything there. Salary. And people, she's underpaid and all. No, she's not. She's paid according to the amount of money that's brought in. The league doesn't bring in the money the NBA brings in, and they have their salary cap, and the teams are trying to still make some freaking money. I mean, that's just the reality of it. The WNBA doesn't draw this many fans, doesn't get the big money for sponsorships for television, and so therefore she's not going to make crazy amounts of money, but she's fortunate enough to have gotten all those other deals on the side. Now, since he brought that up, let me get into this. I think it is reprehensible what some of these ladies on the professional WNBA level are doing against Caitlin Clark. Some of the cheap shots that they're pulling and what they're doing, there should be severe penalties for these young women who are doing stuff like that. This lady has brought more recognition and has done more for women's basketball on the professional level, even on the collegiate level, than any player in modern times. And to treat her that way, it is absolutely pathetic, and they should be ashamed of themselves. And the commissioner should come down, the president, because there's no commissioner, because David Stern didn't want another commissioner. It was Val Ackerman who was president. And so the president should come down big time on any of these players to the point of big fines, even suspensions, to let it be known you are not going to do that kind of petty stuff in our game. So shame on you ladies for doing that.
And you're referring, just to add a little more context, there's been some hard flagrant fouls committed on Caitlin Clark. There's a lot of video evidence of additional physicality. Your wife is a basketball legend. Has Lynn expressed any opinions on Caitlin
Clark? Oh, she's upset about it, without question. There's no doubt about it. It's just not good for the game. It's not right. It's not professional. And you need to put yourself above that. I mean, what they're doing is flat out wrong. I mean, and even to the point of doing something like that, you could conceivably hurt this person. Yeah. And here's the thing: if somebody did something like that to her, not only a fine, but if Caitlin got hurt and was out, that player should have to stay out as long as it took Caitlin to come back.
Good call. I like it. Implement it today. Sign me up.
And same thing, hockey. The dude should do the same thing. When a guy takes a cheap shot at somebody and hurts a guy in hockey with a violent play, he should be suspended for as long as that person is suspended, is out with the injury, because they caused that injury. They should get a fine, and then they're going to lose all that money, and they should be suspended until that player is able to come back and participate again. There has to be something. I'll give you a perfect example. Take a look at stealing overseas in some of the countries over there. You steal something, they cut off a finger, or they cut off your freaking hand.
Ooh, okay. Do they really? That still exists?
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. That still exists. Okay. And in those countries, in those countries, the theft rate is not very high.
Yeah.
Because the penalty for doing it and getting caught is so severe that it's a deterrent. I mean, look at what's happening in San Francisco now. Hey, okay. So somebody's sitting at home. Hey, honey. Hey, you want some new Nikes? Yeah, okay, I'm going to go downtown and I'll pick a few pair up for us and do it. Why? Because you're not going to get, if it's not worth $900 or some ridiculous number, they're not going to go ahead and you're not going to press big charges against you. Are you kidding? It's a misdemeanor. I mean, yeah, so why not? The consequences, I mean, so that's the part I'm making. If you have a severe consequence and you have to pay a severe penalty for doing something that is not the right thing to do, it's a huge deterrent for you to make the decision. Is it worth it for me to do that if I get caught? And if is, and then somebody, some people, maybe they'll take the risk. I don't know. But I think it's going to eliminate a whole lot of people from doing it. Anybody that has reasonable intelligence, let's say.
Which, as Rick, you know, as well as I do, there is not a lot of that in this world. But
well, that's what the politicians count on. That's what the politicians count on. But don't get me, I'm not getting into politics.
Yes, they do. You're right.
Yeah.
You're 100% right. Here's Craig from Pleasanton.
Hey, Rick. It's Craig from Pleasanton. Regarding the WNBA, seems like there's some disgruntled players right now over all the attention that Caitlin Clark is getting, and rightfully so, they might be getting that attention. So providing some dynamics to the game, something like maybe Pistol Pete did in his day. But what's your perspective on all that?
Yeah, well, obviously, I told you we're going to get some stuff. You know what we got to do from now on? We got to look and see what the questions are so that we know what they are. Huh?
So no,
we need to do that, because that way we can just go to the questions right away. Because otherwise, you know me, I mean, like, you know, I've kissed the Blarney Stone. Okay, I did that. I got to go over and kiss the Blarney Stone in Ireland. You know, so that means, if you don't know, folks, supposedly you have the gift of the gab and you talk, and so I can get going and I'll cover a million different things, and all of a sudden I'm answering questions that we're probably having. So we're probably better off initially, let's go to the questions and see what they have to say, and we'll go from there. I think that's a better way to approach it. So it's like, here's the situation. We had a way we were doing it. Wait a sec, this doesn't seem to be working well. It's kind of like sports. Well, we better make a change. You change your game plan. So we're kind of, it's not good that we just talked about that. And the question is what? About what I just answered. So we need to do a better job of,
I can do that. I'll be a better moderator, sir.
We'll go through and we'll look at what the questions are beforehand. Because it's not live, right? So we'll get the questions beforehand, know what the questions are, so that I don't get off on some tangent and start talking about things that are answering all these questions. We'll just go to the questions and get the questions out of the way. And then that'll probably lead to other stuff. And then, so we know where we are and we don't have to duplicate stuff and have people listen to a question that I just gave an answer to. So I'm kind of like Karnak, you know, and Johnny Carson, the Karnak, yep. who knows the answer before he gets the question. Okay. And so I gave the answer before I heard the question. So I'm kind of like Karnak, the Magnificent.
And bringing up Karnak, I think my dad does this. Johnny Carson, who Karnak is the character was played by. I think all of his episodes are on YouTube now. Do you sit back and watch those sometimes?
No, occasionally I'll look at some of the old stuff that's out there, and it's fun to see. And
it is.
Yeah, because back in my era, and so many of the people I knew, I got to play tennis with Johnny Carson and got to meet him, and so many of the other comedians that were out there that I had the good fortune of getting.
Were you a guest on Carson's show ever?
Well, here's the thing. That was a disappointing thing. We didn't get invited to the White House. Right. We didn't get on the cover of Sports Illustrated when we won the championship, but I did get invited to go on the Johnny Carson show. And when I got invited to go, because I had met Johnny, Jerry Lewis was the fill-in host. He wasn't there.
Oh.
So then I got to meet Jerry Lewis. So, you know,
that's cool.
And I met, you know, and that's not Johnny Carson. So it would have been a lot more fun to do that with him, but. You know, so I also got to meet Dean Moore. I mean, I think about that sometime, of all the people in all different walks of life that I had the pleasure and the good fortune of meeting during my lifetime. It's pretty amazing. I just kind of pinch myself and think about that.
That's why I, and for people watching or listening, behind the scenes, I brought this up to Rick before, and I'll bring it up again on the show. When you're ready for me to ghostwrite your autobiography, let me know, because you probably have so many damn stories that are fascinating, and just say when.
I'm actually Alexis Levi, who was an owner of a WNBA team years ago and has done a lot of things in the sports area. She just said she really wants to do it. So actually, they're starting now to go ahead and film stuff. They're actually going to do a documentary about me. Here's the thing.
I told her,
you know, the problem with that, Alexis, is that, and we've already missed out on so many people that I know that would have been great to have on the program, you know, on the show.
Jerry West,
like Bill Walton, like, I mean, Chet Walker. I mean, they waited so long. I'm so damn old right now. Then most everybody's dead. I mean, so people to talk to. I mean, you know, same thing. I'm hoping they get to talk to Louis Carnesecca, who's up in his 90s that I talk to.
He's
regularly.
He's at 99, I think, right?
He's in his late 90s. Yeah. Yeah. And I just talked to him the other day, and you know, so I said, man, you got to get out and try to talk to him quickly. And then now Al Attles has, you know, got some issues and things about doing stuff.
Oh, no. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, well, Al's been struggling with a lot of things here. And so we're all saying prayers and stuff for him. And so, you know, anyway, that's what happens when you get older. And every time you turn around, somebody else is passing away and dying and all. And it gets crazier. It gets crazier the older you get. But, you know, that's life.
Yeah,
and I guess the only thing I look at is as well it wasn't me.
Yeah, right,
so
right,
thank
right.
you for that.
You're still here, and hopefully you're here for another 20 years, sir.
Well, I'm going to be coming into town, you know, for the pickleball event that they're having at the Cow Palace on July 11th, 12th, and 13th. So I'm looking forward to that. So you should check that out. The Warriors are getting behind it, and I think Kaiser Permanente is doing some sponsorship stuff and bringing a lot of kids in for part of it. Then they're having an event and tournament at the Cow Palace, and so I'll be there. So those of you who are pickleballers, I'll look forward to having an opportunity to seeing you either on the 11th, 12th, or the morning of the 13th before I have to head down to Anaheim for my Big Three team to play a game down there on the 14th. So I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome. Well, we got two more questions that are original. Let's hear from ASD Films.
Hey guys, I think it's kind of interesting that LeBron James gets considered one of the greatest basketball players of all time, but as of right now, it seems like no fan really wants him on the team. Most Laker fans don't want him re-signed. I know Warriors fans want him. It's just so interesting compared to like when Jordan went to the Wizards, and I guarantee you any team would have wanted him. I just don't understand that, you know, they're both great players. Is it his attitude? Is it that he just hasn't won in the last couple of years? Why do you think that people don't want more?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously he's had great success wherever he's gone. It wasn't like the Lakers were chump change. I mean, they still, and he had an amazing season last year at his age. He's incredible. The sad thing about it is that I assure you, this is gospel truth here, 100% accurate. As great as LeBron James has been in his career, he could have been better. A lot better, which is scary 100%
agree.
To think about it.
100%.
And there are things that he doesn't never has done in his career. He's never been an 80% free throw shooter. He had a bad shooting form. I will take credit for getting him to change his form when they first came out and played the Warriors in that first time they had the championship series and made a big deal about his flying elbow. Well, he did change that, but there's other things that he never did in his career that he still doesn't do that would have taken his game to even a higher level, which is kind of scary. So that's... It's kind of like God's equalizer, I guess, but he's an amazing player. He does have, thank God, a couple of shortcomings. Otherwise, you'd have to outlaw him. He'd be ridiculous. And I saw him play in high school. When I first saw him play in high school, I said, oh, my God, is this guy going to be a hell of a player? He's got, you know, a few things he's got to improve, but you can always, you know, help a guy with his shot or shooting form, which has helped him. He's become a much better shooter and shooting a three-point shot much better, but never been, like I say, an 80% free throw shooter. So anyway, I don't know personally, you know, why people feel that way, because every place he's gone, the team has had success. I mean, he helped Cleveland get their first championship, missed out the first time, but on the return, he did it. Went down to Miami, got the championships, came to the Lakers, they got a championship. So I don't even know why people are saying that they don't want him and they don't win. I mean, you know, you have him on your team and he plays at the level he plays with, you're going to be a better basketball team. There's just no doubt about it. It's just a matter of who do you put around him? Because LeBron can't win by himself. Nobody wins by – this is a team sport. You don't win a championship on your own. You have to have people contributing. Nowadays, it's like two guys. Then you had to get two guys. Then you had three or more. You know, the old Boston Celtics, when they had that great run, shit, look at the number of great players they had on that team. I mean, seriously. Bill Russell, right? They even had Bill Russell and Bob Cousy and Bill Sharman and Tommy Heinsohn. I mean, and Sam Jones. Casey Jones. I mean, the names of the players about John Havlicek. I mean, come on. This team was loaded. Okay, that's why they were able to win all those championships. And nowadays, they're trying to get, you know, two and three guys, but it's still no guarantee. Look at what Kevin Durant has done. You know, he went places and they had players and all, but it didn't work out. Why? Because it's not just the two players or the three players. Yeah, that's a nice nucleus to have, like the Warriors. But the Warriors won because they were smart enough to surround them with other players, and they brought in veteran guys who are willing to go on the bench. You know, I think of David Lee and
Iguodala
and Andre Iguodala, you know, who are willing to come off the bench, former All-Star players. I mean, this is what it takes. It takes a team to win a championship. And I got so much a kick out of listening to the comments and talk from the players after the Celtics won. It's reminded me so much of our team in 75 about the guys really love one another. They have great chemistry. They all talked about each other. And that was us. Okay. The difference is this. And I don't use the word because you know how much I hate the word pressure, which still gets so overused, drives me crazy.
Actually, I didn't know that. Okay.
Okay. So they talked about the stuff, the pressure. No. There were extremely high expectations on this team to win a title. So for these guys to get out and get it done and perform and do that, I'm telling you, they didn't. If they felt pressure, they would have never gotten it done. They believed in themselves. They believed in themselves, and they rose to the occasion to deal with the enormity of the expectations that were placed upon them. And so that was the difference. They were trying to do something that people expected them to do, which is a very difficult task, okay? And credit to them for doing it. Our situation was totally different. It was a 180. We were trying to go out there and prove to people that we really could win a championship because nobody expected us to be worth a damn. So we had something to prove that we were a good team. They were a team that had proved that they were deserving of the expectations because they were a good team. So it was a little different. And I think, to be honest with you, tougher for them with the expectations that were placed upon them as opposed to us when people weren't paying much attention to us and we can sneak up on people.
If you don't mind, I have a couple opinions on ASD Films' question because the topic of GOAT, the GOAT conversation, right? I know you don't react to this because – and I agree and I understand your logic. I follow that basketball – has different positions, and it's just it's pretty asinine to say that one player in a game with all these different positions that require different skill sets and so forth can be called the greatest ever, right? But generally speaking, in the world of Stephen A. Smith's and, you know, aggregated media, people love having this debate. I think it's ridiculous to compare LeBron James to Michael Jordan in the sense of winning. Jordan's record as a winner is night and day of LeBron. But in regards to why teams back in, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, and fans were salivating over Jordan, and this might not be the case with LeBron currently, is Jordan never meddled with front office type decisions. Like, he didn't have his friend wasn't his own agent. He didn't have another friend handling his meeting and his media enterprises. And Jordan had no one like that constantly poking Krause saying, hey, let's get this guy. I don't like this guy. He wasn't getting rid of coaches every 2 to 3 years. Michael Jordan stayed in one city the entire time. There was a sense of community and loyalty. These things don't apply to LeBron James, given he moves based on however the wind favors him. He changes teams every few years. So when you factor all these things in, the fact that when Jordan played, the salary cap, it was a different era. The salary cap meant something totally different than it is now. LeBron can be, depending on how you view him, a detriment to your team. If like he's going to have to, if he influences your front office in terms of the players to get, the coaches to hire, you never had that problem with Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was a company man, showed up, just, you know, with who they gave him, and played with the same coach who he revered. And those differences, I think, come into play. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, well, those are all valid comments that you're making there. They're all factors, but the bottom line of it is that you never can compare Michael to LeBron. They played the different positions. Also, exactly. It's not about the championships you won, because you don't win championships without great teammates who play at a level that allow you to win titles. And so I go nuts when I see people rating players and sticking them where they are, and they'll, he's rated here, he's rated there. First of all, it should be rated by positions. And then it should not, and then for that and for each decade, stop comparing the freaking decades, folks. I mean, just do it.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Through the decades when somebody played in that 10-year stretch of time, whatever it is, and this one and that one, and do it by position, then you can have a meaningful discussion. And but what kills me is when they go through it and they give extra points rating where they go based upon the number of championships they won. What the hell does that have to do with your talent to play the damn game? If you, I mean, you can only do so much if you don't have talent on your team to win a championship. You're not going to win by yourself. And so because you're lucky enough to be on a team with great talent and you win multiple championships, all of a sudden this makes you better than somebody else at your position on another team that didn't have that talent.
Crazy. I will say this, Rick, based on individual competition, in this case, Jordan versus LeBron, I don't remember Jordan ever having opposed in series like LeBron did in 2011 when they lost to the Mavericks. Like, to me, I know there's five people on the court as a team sport, but LeBron had a whole series, and they lost that series, largely because LeBron performed poorly. I don't remember Michael Jordan ever laying an egg like that when the spotlight was that bright. So just comparing those two, at a minimum, if for no other reason, I look at 2011, and that's where I rank Jordan higher. But I don't know, that's just my opinion on it.
Well, it's pretty simple for me. I rank Jordan as the best two guard to ever play the game. It's simple.
There you go. Is LeBron the best three? Is LeBron the best three to you?
Based upon what he's done, skill-wise, I don't know if you can tell that he was a better all-around player than Larry Bird.
I love that you said that.
Seriously, because Bird, you know, I mean, both of them are great passers. Bird, far superior shooter. Right, far superior shooter. Every bit as good a rebounder. And LeBron's amazing. I mean, it really was. But the thing is, if it came down here, I'll give you. This would be a good one. If it came down to the last 10 seconds of the game, would I want the ball in Bird's hand or would I want the ball in LeBron's hand?
I'm taking Bird. All day, every day. I'm totally with you on that.
Well, and the reason I'm taking Bird is because Bird could get fouled. He can make his free throws. LeBron has, I think, is one of the worst free throw shooters in the last 2 minutes of games. I think that's a fact that I had happened to see a few years ago. I don't know if it's gotten any better, but he was one of the worst of free throws missed in the last couple of minutes. Bird would want to get fouled. LeBron doesn't want to get fouled. And Bird's a much better shooter. And so I would say if I came down to my choice between those two, if I had to have one or the other in that situation, I'm going to want Bird. Not by a whole lot, but I say as great as LeBron is, I'm not trying to knock LeBron. LeBron's one of the greatest players ever. I mean, incredible for his time and what he's done. I mean, the way he played last year at his age was phenomenal.
No doubt. It's ridiculous, Rick. He's going to be 40 years old this year, and he's phenomenal. Still at this level, it is.
Well, I respect the fact because he really spends the time taking care of himself. I heard somebody said he spends $1 million or more on trying to keep himself in shape and handle. But the thing about it is that he also had an opportunity to, anyway, I'm not going to get into it. I won't even get into that. It's right. He should have been better. Okay. He could have been better, but he chose not to want to listen to somebody.
You should get into that. It's always a story. One last new topic for our audience today, and this is from Robbie. Take it away, Robbie.
Hey, Rick. Robbie from the Highlights from Low Life show here on the Mic'd Up app. Kevon Looney got his contract guarantee extension this week, which is probably a good move, but he reminds me of the players of old, like old teammate Clifford Ray and Paul Silas and a lot of other guys that did all the dirty work, you know, on defense. They put a body on a guy. Even though they were smaller, they push a guy out on a couple of extras. Or they clog the passing lanes. They get on the other side and they set screens. That seems like it's a lost art in today's NBA. Will we ever see that come back?
Well, you will if you ever get anybody teaching the fundamentals of the game to these kids when they're younger. I mean, that would be a nice novelty instead of just say, go out there and run faster, jump higher, and use your athleticism, and let's beat that team, instead of teaching you the nuances of the game. That's nice they did for Kayvon, but the problem with him is that he's a liability on offense. I mean, and that proved to be the case when they lost to the Lakers a few years ago, when they had Draymond and Kevin. What happened? Davis and LeBron just plugged the middle. The Warriors didn't get anything going to the basket. I mean, why would you guard them? I mean, if LeBron, you know, if Draymond's going to beat you shooting threes, you can live with that. And Kayvon's never going to shoot. So basically, they're able to just take an extra defender and plug up the middle. And so you got to have a well-rounded game. And yeah, and it's not as if he was a great passer and a great shooter. I mean, at least you had other players who did similar things for other teams over the years. But, you know, they were passers. They were facilitators. I mean, he's not the Joker by any stretch of the imagination passing the basketball, right? So, and I love Kayvon for what he's done for the Warriors. And at times, he can be a valuable asset. He worked a lot when they had the big three. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, come on, when you got KD and you got Steph and you got Clay, I mean, come on. You don't need your center to score. You know, right? You just need him to plug up the middle and get some rebounds and, you know, put himself in a good position to be used as a screener. And yeah, so it worked really great with him, but he has limitations that could cause a problem for you depending upon who you're playing against and when he's in the game.
Absolutely. Before we go, I want to mention this, and I love your thoughts, going back to the Jordan-LeBron thing, because this is the best, and this is courtesy of an individual named Kevin Wiles, who's with FS1, and he made this argument about a year or so ago, and to me it sticks out the most, of why Jordan, if taking the positions out, if you're going to have a go-to, or at least let's say comparing between Jordan and LeBron, who the better player is. The different, like, Jordan... I'm gonna present to you a hypothetical player. This player has two championships, two finals MVPs, has NBA MVP award. This player has made three all-defensive teams. This player has won Defensive Player of the Year award. And this player has 9 scoring titles. That's the difference between Jordan and LeBron. Those stats represents a Hall of Fame career on its own. And that alone is why I think Jordan is superior. But that's
okay. Well, isn't that good? You're entitled to your opinion, just like anybody else. And so here's the thing. No. Did you see the story that came out about the padding of statistics for Jordan?
I did not. No, enlighten me.
You need to go out and go Google that. I'm telling you, and I've talked to some people and all, and yeah. There's some overwhelming evidence about it. Really interesting stuff that was going on. And the difference in his stats at home as opposed to on the road, the year that he got the Defensive Player of the Year award, it's pretty...
Are you referring to, I'm looking up something right now, referring to the Chicago Bulls scorekeeper?
Yep.
Okay. So what I'm looking at here is a story from Tom Haberstroh with Yahoo Sports. And according to this story, Chicago Bulls official scorekeeper during home games.
It's a stats keeper. It's a stats keeper, not the scorekeeper.
I'm sorry. Might have been. Now, this doesn't say.
Not might have. Not might have. It's pretty well proven that it was.
Okay. But was this happening every year, or was this just in 87?
No, in particular, in the year that he won the scoring title, that he won the Defensive Player of the Year award, ever, because nobody's ever done that. Nobody's ever done what he accomplished. But just read the story, and there's a whole lot of stuff that kind of validates that it really did take place. And it's pretty dramatic. They have statistics there showing differentials between other players' home and away and stuff. Nothing comes close to what I think you'll find it really interesting. I found that I had no idea. I mean, so it makes me kind of feel good because I feel the one thing I like to brag about is my free throws. I brag because you can be selfish and help your team. That's an individual thing. But one of the things that I'm most proud of is that I think I still hold the record by a small forward for a number of assists in a game. And it was 19 on the road in Chicago. And I said, well, if I got 19 there, I probably had more than that because I know they screwed me out of a few of them. So anyway, you know, so, but that's, you know, that, that was, it was really interesting to hear about that. I never in my life walked on a basketball court ever worrying about how many rebounds I had, how many assists I was going to get, how many points I was going to score that night. I walked out there to go and play the hardest and the best that I could play. And whatever happened, happened. I never went out and saying, I'm going to go out and get 30 tonight or something. No, never, never.
So you just looked at the stats after the game was over and just thought,
no,
hey,
after the game. I mean, I knew if I was shooting the ball well or not afterwards. Well, I mean, I'd take a look and say, well, geez, shit, I was pretty hot tonight. What did I do? I mean, you know, and I knew I was scoring points, but I didn't, you know, I didn't know if I was getting close. Oh shit, I need another basket for 50. I mean, I had no idea. In fact, I remember in the game I was playing in the game, I had 64 points against Portland in Oakland. And I remember because Bill Walton, God rest his soul, Bill, I was actually at that game because he was playing at UCLA and they came to the game because they were playing Cal the next day. And so I had 64, but I remember the crowd was just yelling for me to go shoot, shoot. I didn't know how many points I had. I mean, I knew I scored a lot, but they kept yelling for me to shoot. Well, shit, if I had a guy open, I'm throwing the ball to my open teammate. That's just the way I played. I had no idea. I mean, I think if I had really tried to do it, I more than likely could have got 70 or more without any question. I mean, but I didn't even know I had 64.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy. So let me ask you this. Jordan won Defensive Player of the Year in 87-88. That was one of the first years I was old enough to pay attention to basketball, and I do remember it. But you would remember it way better than me. And do you feel that someone else deserved it over him? That's
well, the guy that everybody talks about would be Michael Cooper.
Right, right. And Jordan made it. Actually, I'm reading the exact story you're referring to right now. Jordan has a quote in this story from way back when that he said, when it comes to Michael Cooper, he basically said that Cooper is great at ball denial, but that other, oh, here it is right here. Quote, Michael Cooper is great at ball denial, but check his other stats. The league gives defensive awards on reputation. It just tee off. And then apparently Jordan had a vengeful 87-88 season based on that. I've heard that John Stockton, his assist might have been padded a little bit too. I don't know if you've ever heard that the Utah Jazz scorekeeper was giving him a few extra ones here. But it's interesting.
Well, here's my whole thing is that I also think I wish basketball did what they do in hockey. The pass that led to the assist.
Oh, the hockey. So you would support that?
I think it's a critical thing to show you how important somebody is, because if you make the great pass because you see the open teammate and then he's smart enough to make the pass for an even better shot, it all started with you making that first pass. You're the one that initiated. Now, if you throw the ball to somebody and he's there holding on to it, doing shit, and he makes a pass for an assist, no, you don't get one for that. But I'll give you a perfect example. Leandro Barbosa drove in our game, our first game. He drove, got to the basket, whipped a great underneath the basket, threw a pass out to his countryman, Lucas Mariano, and he got it and quickly swung it to Jody Meeks, and Jody Meeks made a three-pointer. So Mariano, Lucas gets the assist, but it was Leandro who created the play, and right. He should have gotten an assist as well. The pass leading to the pass.
I would support hockey assists. Yeah, I think that's very
I like nice. It. I think it's a very telling statistic.
By the way, Jordan, that season, this is a crazy story. Thanks for introducing me and the audience to this. Michael Jordan that season when he won Defensive Player of the Year, and again, this is where if it's true that there was padding, it is kind of crazy. But Michael Jordan that year set the record by a guard for steals and blocks per game. He had 3.2 steals per game, 1.6 blocks per game. To this day, never matched by any other guard in the NBA. And according to the story, and so, Rick, you feel like it's valid? You think that there was something going on?
Well, just go on and look at the stats later on. There's a chart there showing the difference between the other people, what he did at home and what he did on the road.
I see it now.
It's dramatic.
It's 180% difference.
Thank you.
Of home versus road steals and blocks. Yeah, that's interesting. That is interesting.
No, it's very interesting. That was very interesting. I never even knew or thought about it. I didn't either. Just happened to come across it. I says, wow, I bet you this is really pissing Michael off.
Well, and here's another stat. So as everyone knows, or they should know, NBA teams play the same amount of home and road games, 40 weeks. In that season where Jordan won Defensive Player of the Year, 87-88, he had 165 steals at home, 94 on the road.
Yeah, that's pretty dramatic.
Good stuff, Rick. Good stuff. Bravo.
Yeah, but here, listen, we're not taking it. Michael Jordan, this is the greatest two guard that ever played the game. Okay, so I'm not trying to belittle Michael or anything. I just said I thought it was really interesting
that
things of this nature come out. I mean, because I told you, I've learned more about stuff I've done in my career in the last 10 years than I ever knew in my lifetime because of the statistical stuff that comes out all the time that I never paid any bit of attention to at all. Michael is, to me, still the greatest of two. I don't care what the hell happened in that particular season. I just thought it was interesting reading, and I had no idea that it even took place. And probably 99% of the people who are basketball fans probably had no idea. You included, Cyrus.
Yes, sir.
So enjoy that one, folks. Look it up and check it out for yourself because it's a pretty telling thing. And to me, I'm sorry that it even happened, that it really did take place because, I mean, he was so great anyway. I mean, but anyway, it's not going to make me change my mind about how great he was.
Oh, that's incredible. The story also brings up like other examples of stat padding. It is interesting because some of these stats, it's not like there's a million people at home double checking this. There is no factor. It's just a scorekeeper writes the stuff down and it's submitted to the NBA. And that's.
But they went back and watched film to go ahead and to authenticate this.
Right. In the story,
that's the whole thing about the story. That's what I'm saying, because there's great validity to what was being done there. So you got to, you have to accept it because it's not just somebody's opinion.
Right. Right.
This is factual. Factual. So it's like, as I told people, there's only one statistic in the game of basketball that's a true statistic, totally and completely true. And that's free throw shooting.
Mm. So you're saying that's the one objective stat, like.
Well, it's the one stat that because there's no way to hedge on it. You can somebody say, hey, his field goal percentage. Yeah, but where did he shoot from? His field goal percentage was 54%. But hell, he never took a shot past 8 feet from the basket. I mean, so there are other variables. Basketball, it's the only one that's the same distance every time, the same ball size every time, the same basket every time, with no one trying to prevent you from doing what you're doing. How much simpler does it get? So that's why I will brag about my free throw shooting, and I still will say that I was the best free throw shooter because my last 6 years, my percentage was higher than anybody's career average. My last 2 years were over 94%. I was better at the end of my career because I was willing to change and get better. You should always never be satisfied. You should always try to get better in everything you do, and this is the perfect example. I was able to do that, and I'll brag about it because – and it's the only one you can be selfish and help your team.
Yes, sir. I love it. I love it. And this story was just 5 days ago, I believe, 6 days ago.
Yeah, I happened to be going through it. I said, what is this?
Yeah, this is good.
And I read it. I'm glad I did because it was really interesting and well done.
Yeah, it is. It's great stuff. Thank you for the introduction.
All right. Well, everybody, good luck with the Warriors. Let's see who they come up with. And, as I say, I don't care what somebody did in college. What do you do in the pros? That's all that really matters. But I hope that they get somebody that can be a contributing fact to the team. But it's not often that you have a rookie be a major factor in your team's success. It happens occasionally. It happened with me, obviously, with the Warriors. And then it's happened before. I mean, but it doesn't happen all that often. It's usually, in our case, that's why we won the championship. We had two rookies who were integral parts of our team's success. And that was Jamal Wilkes, who was Keith Wilkes at the time, who was a starter and got to be Rookie of the Year, and Phil Smith, who developed into an all-star player for the Warriors. To have two rookies contribute like that, that's why we were able to win the championship, with contributions from people that never expected that to come from necessarily. So hopefully the Warriors will get lucky and have somebody that's going to step up and play at a high level. And we pick up some other people, some veterans, and bring them in to give the Warriors another shot. I hope that happens. And I hope Clay stays.
Before we go, we forgot to talk about one last thing, which is the Golden State Warriors this morning teased a major announcement, and no one had any clue what that meant, and it turns out it's a new uniform.
Oh, my God. How many? They have had – listen, I think they have had more uniforms in the last 10 years than Heinz has had pickles styles. It's unbelievable the number of – I mean, the uniforms. They had a black uniform, and another – this one's black, and the chain – I mean, it's just been unbelievable. I mean, hey, you know, for the guys – if they keep all the uniforms, if you're a great player, just think of how much money you can make on giving up your other uniforms because you got all these uniforms that you have. I wish I had my old uniforms. I do have my shirt, but, you know, from the amount of money that I would have had if I had all my old stuff, warm-ups and jerseys and everything in the memorabilia world, it's crazy what some of this stuff sells for. It really is.
Where did your stuff go? You just never did? Is that what happened? You never saved it?
My ex-wife threw it out when we got divorced.
I'm sure a lot of people cringing like I am right now.
It was kind of freaking painful a little bit, but it is what it is. It's a different world. Just like the same thing with cards. That my rookie, everybody said, My rookie card came out 4 years after I was in the pros.
That's
or more
weird.
Than that.
Why
more,
that?
No, more than that. One, two, sat out, three, four, five. Yeah, no, it was it was the fifth year. I played two, sat out one, played a year for the Oaks, then I went to the Washington Caps. No, it was the sixth year. It was my sixth year in professional basketball before they had basketball cards. It was when I was with the Nets.
So they had baseball cards going back 100 years.
Baseball cards. That's why they're so valuable. It's crazy the money they get back at Honus Wagner and all those people. Some of those in good condition, million. They sell for millions of dollars, but basketball didn't come out until I was with the with the Nets. It's crazy.
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm looking at a Rick Barry rookie card.
It's a Nets, New York Nets.
Yeah, there's one with the Nets and there's one with the Warriors from 1972 Topps.
But that's after the Nets. That's after I came back.
Correct. You're absolutely right. So I'm trying to see what so $416 if one owns a 1971 Rick Barry Topps rookie card with
you. But if it's graded 9 or 10, it's going to be worth way more than that.
Gotcha. There you go.
Because there's the grading of the card itself as to the quality of the card.
Gotcha. Do you own any of that?
So no, I mean I have a bunch of cards and stuff around, but I mean it's like. But I also had an unbelievable collection of baseball cards and comic books, different kind of comic books, first edition shit. And I with the cards back in those days, any duplicates, we would play matching cards. You flip cards and you have to say, okay, you want to match me or do I match you? And so you take 20 cards, hold them at your side and you flip them. And I could flip them and basically get 20 heads or 20 tails. And they would have to match that exact number. And then you bet on the fight. So I'll play you for these three cards and they're brand new cards that maybe you don't have. And so you take those and you keep those, but you never do anything with them. You keep those your collector stuff and protect them. I had the cards and stuff that I had, I probably had all kinds of Mickey Mantles and back in the, I mean, I had a lot of great cards and comic books, first edition stuff, which all are worth a lot of money these days. And it was sad. My father burned them.
Accidentally or?
No, on purpose. He made me stand there and watch him throw them in the furnace.
What did you do that pissed them off?
I don't. Well, whatever it was, I think it warranted him doing that to me. That was probably the worst thing my father ever did to me. He did a lot of wonderful things for me, but that's the worst thing my father ever did to me.
How old were you, if you don't mind me asking, just looking at a better idea of this story? Like, were you a kid?
I was probably in elementary school.
Okay, so you did something that pissed your dad off, and he decided to burn your collection of cards that's worth
that was a very painful moment. I've never had a nightmare about it, which is good.
I'm looking that's a good story, Rick. I'm looking, by the way, you're right, this is a 1971-72 Topps Rick Barry rookie card, near mint, so not mint, $1,000. The actual mint can is probably $1,500-$2,000 for your rookie. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, anyway, everybody, let's hope the Warriors get some good people. I hope everybody enjoys the summer. And if you happen to come out to the pickleball event, say hello. That's July 11th, 12th, and 13th.
How can people find tickets for that?
I don't know. Just go to the Warriors. They probably have something. Just put, you know, Warriors pickleball event, July 11th, 12th, 13th at the Cow Palace.
See if I can find that right now real fast just so I can tell people how they can buy tickets for it. I'm coming to that. I still feel awful for not making that big three game. I will come to the Cow Palace July 11th, and let's see if there is a proper way to direct people to get tickets for that. At the moment, I don't see anything. I promise I'll promote this on social media. And speaking of which, people can find you on social media, regardless of what the platform is, at Rick24Berry. And you can follow me on Threads at Dog Wild, and I promise I will post this once I figure out how people can buy tickets for that. But yeah, July 11th, Rick Berry.
11th, 12th, 13th. I'll be there. I get to play. I guess I'll play a couple of exhibitions or whatever it might be. But anyway, it's fun. Anything related with pickleball. So it was nice of the Warriors to invite me. And if those of you out there say a prayer that all goes as well as possible for Al Addles, please.
That's terrible news. Yeah, he's going to get my prayers as well. Rick, this is always a pleasure, sir. Always a grand old time. Thank you.
All right. Take care and good luck and all stuff with your new show. Tell people about your new show.
Thank you. Yeah, Golden Days. Rick, I hope you're a guest soon. Literally just on YouTube, podcast, wherever it is, just type in Golden Days. Add the word Warriors to the end if you don't find it right away. It's a daily 5-day-a-week show. I'm incredibly lucky and thankful that a lot of my audience from the old show has made it over. And Rick, I can't wait to have you on there as a guest, but, thank you for letting me plug.
Always happy to do that. All right. Take care, everybody. God bless. See you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.